All right, real quick, can you look into the camera and say, this podcast is brought to you and powered by Sunday School. Watch this or listen.
This podcast is brought to you and powered by Sunday School. Watch this or listen.
You did say Sunday School.
Hey, let me do it again.
You can try.
Yeah, you can try.
One more time.
Brought to you or powered by Sunday.
And powered.
It's too long. This podcast is brought to you and powered by Sunday Cool. Watch or listen.
Yes!
Or don't. Or you know what? Don't. You know what?
Click away, actually.
Ho, ho, ho! Santa's here, and I've got a deal sweeter than the Christmas cookies. It's the Sunday Cool Super Soft Stock Up Spectacular! Looking for the softest fleece on this side of the North Pole? Look no farther! These bad boys will keep you cozier than a snowy day in your PJs. But wait, don't you dare wait till last minute to start planning your 2025 shirt orders! No! You know who's on the naughty list? Bad planners! Get ahead of the game with tees, fleece, hats, stickers. Remember, early birds get the goods and avoid the Christmas crunch. And just like Rudolph said, plan now, shine later. Call, click on Messrs. Sunday Cool today, because if it's got to be soft, it's got to be Sunday Cool. And from all of us here at Sunday Cool, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And don't forget to start planning. You know why? Because Santa's watching!
Can I turn this down? Is there a way I can turn this down?
Yeah, he can turn it down.
Yep.
All right. But when you do the music, I'll put it on.
Okay, yep. All right, we ready to start?
Who says we're going to do music, though? I don't know if we ever... Do we do music?
I didn't prepare anything.
No, I mean,
I mean,
if he's requesting one, he's obviously requesting one.
I've heard that you gentlemen are fond of the musical arts.
We dabble. I don't know.
We tend to dabble in the musical stuff.
We dabble a little bit.
Modern day Frank Sinatra.
Hey guys, welcome Tim Alberino.
Hey, finally! Perfect. Perfect.
Tim didn't hear any of that.
He didn't hear the DJ. We had DJ air horns that played.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
It kind of went like,
it was like that. But finally, Tim's in the studio, all the way from Montana and Peru and everywhere, really.
In the hollow earth, I believe.
Yes, right? Especially the hollow earth.
Yeah.
The flat earth, too.
Yeah. The flat hollow earth.
Yeah, with the firmament, with the water above. That's what I learned about yesterday. I was watching a video. People believe that there's the firmament and then there's water.
Yeah.
There's no space.
Right.
I'm for it.
What's to be
I approve.
Oh, man. Thanks for coming on, Tim.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we hung out last night around the fire, talked about some wild stuff. We saved some stuff. We said, Tim, stop talking.
You're talking too much.
That is always the trick with hanging out before a pod.
I know, like with Lil, my wife, so she's on the podcast a lot, and... There's so much stuff that I find, and I just keep it from her. And I'm just like, I'm doing this. I'm like,
I can't hide things from my wife.
I tell her so bad. Did you hear Donald Trump got shot in the ear?
They think it was an MK Ultra project.
yeah, but so we had to keep some stuff from, or Tim had to keep some stuff from us. We're like, save it, and we'll talk about it on the pod. So...
You were kind of mean about it, though.
A little bit.
Me? Like, shut up. Yeah.
Tim.
You snapped at him.
Tim, shut up. Shut up, bro.
Get on my nerves. You're talking too much.
Oh, man. No, it was fun, though.
It was great. We're super happy you're here. Yeah. And, yeah, this is going to be an exciting time. We're not going to talk about... We're going to be basically talking about fabrics today.
Mm-hmm.
Sewing. Crocheting.
Yes.
Tim's real. Like, you come on the podcast, you always talk about Nephilim, fallen angels, Peruvian face peelers. But when do we actually get down to the nitty gritty of who Timothy Alberino is?
I have a deep knowledge of fabrics.
Yeah, see? That's all. This is a fabric episode, guys.
This is a time for you to shine.
Joanne Fabrics, he's a big investor.
This episode is called The Nitty Gritty, right?
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
If there isn't a podcast where it's literally just two ladies gossiping and while knitting, and it's not called The Nitty Gritty,
dude.
Boom.
Yeah.
You're welcome, whoever you are. Grandma.
All right, Mr. Alberino, would you like a song?
I would love a song. I expect a song, actually.
All right.
I'd be offended if you didn't sing one.
We can maybe just come up with something
real quick. Okay. Top of the head, maybe?
Yeah.
I got high expectations here. This better be good.
Let's keep them a little lower.
Let's shoot for the curb. Everything above is gravy.
Ow!
Then the old switcheroo.
I think that should be all right.
Okay. Rock and roll. We'll just come up with something?
Yeah. I mean, just, yeah, whatever genre you're thinking. I'm cool with whatever.
Gangster rap.
Right, okay. Yeah, we can do that.
We'll do gangster rap. That's what I'll do.
Ready,
sir.
There was a man born under the gray skies of Cleveland. Timothy Alberino, they called him. A child with fire in his eyes and questions in his heart. He heard the call of something greater. A whisper from the heavens, pulling him far, far from home. He left the city, left the comfort of walls and streets behind him. The road led him to Peru, to the jungles where the trees speak secrets and the rivers carry stories of things unseen. He followed the path of the ancient ones, digging through time, finding truths forgotten. In the middle of the night, he began his trek into the jungle. With nothing but a monkey on his shoulder, switchblade in his pocket, and a lord in his heart. He walked for miles inside that vast darkness, until two creatures appeared before him. On his right, a 10-foot-tall Nephilim giant. And on his left, floating, a Peruvian face peeler. There to battle. Most men would give up, but no, not Timothy. He looked the giant in the face peeler in the eyes, looked up to the Lord, and began to slowly levitate, rising above the jungle, looking down upon the monsters, to then shoot laser beams out of his eyes, destroying them once and for all. Timothy Alberino.
Timothy, the face peelers, all of the giants, they're the face peeler. What would you do without Alberino? Cause everyone knows he's our hero.
Alberino!
Timothy Alberino. All right. Two things. I feel like, first of all, the song was very accurate.
Especially the levitating and lasers coming out of my eyes.
Yes. Okay, good. Okay. I'm glad.
I feel like we need more cowbell, though. It's missing cowbell.
Gotta have more cowbell.
I got a prescription. Oh, I know. I got a fever.
Also, we got to talk about royalties because this song is going to be big.
It's going to be the song of the summer for sure.
You should make it the intro song for your podcast.
I should.
Yeah.
I don't have a podcast. Create a podcast.
There you go.
Oh,
there we go.
Please let us make the intro to your podcast. That would be the greatest honor.
Done.
Yes. All right. Let's go.
Alberino.
Albacino. Albacino. We were trying to rhyme all the things that could possibly rhyme with Alberino last night.
He's not at the casino.
Where did he go?
Cool. Well, we're having
fun. Well done, gentlemen.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm not disappointed.
I mean, we just came up with it right off the spot, right?
Yeah, that's the crazy thing. And I didn't even know that we were that good at gangster rap, but we nailed it, I think.
I think that was a really good gangster rap.
Take that, Tupac.
The old hip hop.
The old hippity hoppity.
That's right. But everyone just be quiet for a second. Tim, I don't know if you've seen our podcast, but we like to have a lot of fun. But before we can have fun, we have to sometimes just answer really, really serious questions.
Naturally.
So we have our viewers send in questions, and today's question is pretty big.
It's a big one, and
the rule is, Tim, it's a yes or no. There's no explaining this way or that way. It's just a yes or no question.
That's how I like to answer the really big questions.
That's good. That's really good, Tim. And today's question, I think, with what's happening in our society,
yes,
within our culture, you know, it's just this question, it makes sense with what's happening right now.
Absolutely.
You know, just with our government, with just everything.
Congress,
Senate,
the House,
executive branch. The fact that
the closet.
Tim's here. The closet.
That'd be a good question. You're really working it up pretty good.
Yeah,
here.
It's heavy.
Unfortunately, I didn't come up with it at all. But today's question, sent in by a viewer. Are children safe around UFOs? Are children safe?
No. Yes.
What's your final answer, Tim?
No. Yes.
I'm only allowed to give a yes or no.
Yeah, it's a yes or no.
And when we say yes or no, it's not yes and no.
Okay.
Are my children safe around UFOs? Are your children?
Well, it all depends on the.
Context. I don't want to speak.
So I'm just going to go with the no on this one. We'll go with the no on this one.
That's unfortunate.
That is really unfortunate.
Because everyone knows that UFOs stand for United Federation of Orphans. And you're saying kids aren't safe around other kids who have lost their parents?
Yeah.
Whoa. If I'm getting this right, Tim, and I know...
I got a real problem with orphans.
Oh, no!
Apparently, Tim, because it seems like these orphans should just not have friends with other children.
That's what Tim's saying.
I didn't have friends with other children.
Oh, no.
This is a shock.
I turned out so good you guys wrote a song about me.
Yeah, apparently. And, man. I mean, well.
You take it or leave it, I guess, but.
This is a first.
That's disappointing.
This is a first. Well, I guess you guys heard it here first. Tim doesn't think his children or any child is safe around an orphan because they don't have parents. Welcome to the show.
Did I say ninja? I meant
butterfly.
The butterfly is no doubt one of God's most
beautiful. Just empty your mind.
You learn martial arts.
Ninjas are dead.
I hate all the orphans in the world.
Timothy Alvarino, 2024.
That's a Nacho Libre.
Yeah, I hate all the orphans.
What'd you say? Say it to my face. Come again.
They're going to clip that whenever you run for president.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
We should walk that back then.
Yeah.
We planned it out to where you
hate most of the orphans
okay.
in the world.
The certain types, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We planned it out to where you'd say yes, that they should fear it or that they're not safe around it. And we're going to say, so you're fine with children being in the United Federation of Octopi.
Which is just,
I think it's better the other way. What did I say? No?
Yeah.
Oh.
You said no, then yes. Yeah. And I think that's that was our problem. We assumed you would say yes.
Yes.
But Tim's obviously like, dude, level. Go to the UFO.
He's like,
run
he's
to
like,
the UFO.
Yeah. Children are not safe around UFOs. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh. Well, welcome, Tim. We're in it now.
We are in it.
The party has begun.
Happy to be here.
Now, our conversation last night consisted of, what did we all talk about? We talked about
a lot.
The New Jersey drones, which this comes out a couple weeks after it started, so who knows where that's at.
Yeah.
Which we weren't far off with that prediction, that guy's AI prediction.
Yeah, the 39 days.
Yeah. From Rogan.
December 3rd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was almost like 10 days off.
That's the thing, though. It's like with the, when someone says a specific date.
Yeah.
It's more than likely not going to happen.
That's what Jesus, dude, Jesus did so many things right. One of them being, he said, when you come back? Soon. Just be vague about it. Soon. And because it'll always be correct.
He's like, I don't know. You don't know. Father knows. We'll see.
Yep.
Yeah.
Soon. We talked about a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I want to hear your thoughts on, again, by the time this comes out, there's probably going to be a lot of revelation that happens with these drones and what all is what. But I want to hear your thoughts on what's going on.
Difficult to transition into a serious conversation.
That's what it's not really serious. We're just
I think there's a variety of possibilities at this point. You have, of course, a foreign adversary, foreign actor possibility. It could be, say, China, that has made incursions into our airspace and is presenting this technology in a threatening posture, hovering above critical infrastructure, military installations. You could have drones, because remember we had the spy balloon drift across the United States. They didn't shoot it down until it got over the East Coast, and then they finally shot it down. This kind of feels like that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And but in this case, if it were a foreign adversary, and I don't know if it is, it's just a possibility. Yeah, yeah. You could have various kinds of payloads on these drones. You could have pathogenic payloads.
Yeah.
In other words, anthrax, fentanyl.
Mm-hmm.
You could aerosolize into the atmosphere from a drone, which would be obviously very devastating over a populated area like New Jersey or New York. Or, you know, they could be capable of carrying a dirty bomb or even a nuke.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's one scenario, and that could explain the hesitancy by the government to shoot them down. Right. I mean, if you got a drone carrying an anthrax payload, you don't want to really shoot it down.
Yeah, it's almost like if that was the case, like if someone was planning those things, and they're just assuming, U.S. is going to just blow them up or take them out.
Yeah.
And that's the plan.
Plus, if the Pentagon were to admit that China's flying drones over our restricted airspace, that's an act of war.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
The balloon that floated across the United States, that was, China said they didn't intend for it to go that way, that the jet stream picked it up, whatever. You can't make that claim with a drone.
Yeah.
No, yeah, that's so very...
So that would be war. Right. And that would explain why there would be a hesitancy from the government to engage. I'm not sure that's the case. It is a possibility. There's a second possibility, and this one I do think is the case. I think it's very possible that those droids, let me start that sentence over.
They're droids?
The droids. I think it's very possible that the drones have been deployed in a let's call it a reconnaissance capacity.
Yeah.
Where they're looking for something. And why do I think this? Because they have been spotted over Trump's properties quite a bit.
Yeah.
They've been spotted over, as I said, military installations, critical infrastructure, and even, apparently, there's been some drone sightings over the Capitol building.
Oh, geez, I didn't know that.
So if you have a dirty bomb that's been smuggled into the United States, the government knows there's a dirty bomb somewhere, but they don't know where it is. There's two things that are going to happen. First, they're going to investigate. They're going to fly drones. They're going to scan. And they're going to do this in very particular areas, areas that would be targets for an attack.
Sure.
Infrastructure, military installations, Trump's.
Yeah.
You know, the incoming president's properties.
Yeah.
The Capitol building. And they're not going to want to tell the public what they're doing or why they're doing it, because it would cause mass hysteria. Mm-hmm. It would cause
a lot of speculation too, and
a lot of speculation, yeah. And it could cause a mass exit out of the New Jersey area. And I understand why the government would not want to be forthright about that.
Yeah.
So are they looking for some kind of a dirty bomb? They would be trying to detect something. I don't know what kind of equipment they're using on those drones. Those drones are capable of carrying, by the way, all kinds of reconnaissance surveillance equipment.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I have a drone. Me and my partner, Gary Haven, we have a deep underground penetrating radar that operates off of a drone platform. Also, we should keep in mind that we're talking about drones of varying sizes, small and then very large. We have multiple craft that are unmanned vehicles that are large that can loiter. Mm-hmm. The military has them. So this is not something that's all that unusual. China has them. I would imagine that Russia has them. China might be actually more advanced than we are in drone technology. That's an area where they really have excelled. So that's the second possibility. And I would attach to that second possibility the idea that maybe we have deployed these drones, some agency within our government, and we're either looking for something like, as I said, a dirty bomb. We know it's here. We know it's on the East Coast, but we don't know where it is. Or we could have deployed these drones in response to legitimate UFO activity.
Yeah.
So that's the second possibility in my mind. The third possibility would be legitimate UFO activity. Mm-hmm. Like, are these actually UFOs? And I did a Twitter X post the other day, and this is kind of giving me face peeler vibes for those who
know. You know, that's how we first found you.
Yeah.
The face peelers?
Yeah. We were told about the face peelers, and I'm like, what is that? And then we got connected to Blurry, listened to the face peelers, and we talked about it on an episode, and we were like following the story the whole time.
Yeah, that was wild. And that situation, somebody was deploying advanced technology in the jungle.
In Peru, right?
In Peru. Some of it looked like conventional technology, but also it wasn't exactly conventional technology. And we can get into that later if you want. But that's what this feels like. It feels like in some cases we're looking at conventional technology, but then there's certain aspects of this phenomenon that seem to be unconventional. Like, well, you have orbs in the mix here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and which are completely different.
It could be unrelated, or UFOs have been interested in our nuclear facilities and capabilities for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
UFOs are almost always present every time we test a nuke, especially, you know, there's pictures of nukes being tested in particular places where you actually can see in some of the pictures a flying saucer. Mm-hmm. So there's certainly interest in our nuclear capabilities. You've had saucers and various kinds of UFOs that have hovered over our secret silos, nuclear silos, and have disarmed them. Mm-hmm. Like in Montana, where I'm from, at Maelstrom Air Force Base, they disarmed the warheads. A very famous incident.
Blurry had one of the guys on, right? That was a part of that?
I think so.
Was it the 60s or the 50s when that first happened?
I'm trying to remember. I don't recall
maybe the
date of that particular incident. But there's a lot of incidents
where
UFOs have been in the vicinity of sensitive nuclear assets. So it wouldn't surprise me that you would have orbs, because I believe that a lot of the orbs, it's technology. I think it's reconnaissance technology. I don't think it's ours. I don't think the orbs are ours. We may have developed orb technology at this point, but I personally doubt it. So I think that you're looking at non-human reconnaissance, the orbs.
Yeah.
And certainly,
That's scary.
Certainly the orbs are used for non-human. When I say non-human reconnaissance, I mean that the orbs were manufactured by a non-human race.
Yeah.
So aliens.
That doesn't make me feel better. You clearing that out like that scares
actually, that
me more.
Makes me feel better because I'd rather have this whole phenomenon be aliens than our government looking for a nuke that we can't find, a rogue nuke.
True.
Dude, I'm thinking like if the orbs are new technology, right? Like from wherever, but like let's just for argument's sake say that they're technology that is human developed. It would also make sense too that we would be using, you know, some of the bigger drones, they do like military, like, what do you call them? Like conferences and exhibits and stuff. And so people have seen these bigger drones.
Yeah, expos.
Yeah. But it would make sense that they would gather intel on test flight of an orb with the older tech.
So they could.
If
there's a legitimate UFO flap happening right now, UFO flap just means that it's a increased activity of UFOs in a particular area.
Yeah.
Then you could imagine a scenario in which elements of the United States government would deploy reconnaissance vehicles. And also, don't forget, we have a lot of assets in space. We can see an infrared in space. We have GPR, ground penetrating radar in space. I feel like the government is deploying a lot of technology right now to look for something really dangerous. That's what it feels
and is,
like.
And is though, or do you think those drones, if they are theirs, they don't want, because we haven't seen a 4K picture of one.
One crashed.
Yeah, but we haven't seen pictures of it, though.
It crashed.
So is it why we're not seeing it is because they don't necessarily want
They don't want, you to, here's a problem. Here's a problem with this whole scenario. The drones are just flying at night.
Yeah.
You would think that if you want to quell the anxiety, you would fly the drones during the day so that people can see, oh, it's a drone, must be the government. The fact that they're flying them at night makes the whole thing more mysterious.
That's true. I never even thought about that.
And
the night is scary.
But there may be reasons why they would be flying at night. There may be reasons for that we don't understand, technological reasons.
The moon.
We have no idea what kind of technology the Pentagon actually has.
Yeah.
That's being deployed on these drones. They probably have stuff that even the drone manufacturers don't know about, because you could have a drone company and you have all kinds of contractors who make drones for the military. They can make the drone and the basic technology, but when the government gets that drone, when the military gets that drone, they're going to retrofit it with some technology that's not publicly known.
Well, do you think that whole conspiracy about us where we do the crash UFO retrieval. Yeah, and then like we reverse engineer.
We absolutely have been retrieving crashed UFOs for decades.
Yeah. They said in the congressional hearing, right?
We've been reverse engineering. We've had, I would say we've had limited success in reverse engineering that technology for several reasons. But yes, the two hearings, the first hearing that happened, was it last year, the first hearing?
Yeah.
That's where David Grush and David Fravor and another individual, Ryan Graves, they gave testimony. And Grush's testimony was particularly explosive because he said that while exploring this topic in an official capacity as an intelligence community official, he was hitting a roadblock. He was aware of a program, a legacy crash retrieval program and reverse engineering program, but he was not allowed to be read into it. In other words, they were denying him access. And he has other sources and friends in the intelligence community who haven't come forward, who have been resourcing him. And I absolutely believe that David Grush is telling the truth.
Yeah.
I have friends in Congress who are friends with Grush and who interface with him, and they absolutely believe that he's telling the truth. And I have no doubt at all whatsoever that we have a crash retrieval program. There's a couple of people who've come to me who've allegedly, I haven't been able to thoroughly vet these individuals yet, but have allegedly been on retrieval sites.
Dang.
and seen bodies.
Big flex.
And the bodies are little. And the bodies are grays. They're,
okay, they're, well then that leads me to this question: what are your thoughts on what they are or what they could be? Like the grays, well, the.
This is very complex. Before I go there, let me
five return. Words or less.
Let me return for that.
Yes or no?
Can we just do yes or no? Yeah. Returning to that, to the drones, let me just state the final option in my mind, and it'll tie into your question, which is this could be a legitimate UFO flap. And I think I did say that, did I not?
Yeah.
As the third option. So you could be looking at a legitimate UFO heightened activity. I have problems with that theory. I think legitimate UFO activity is in the mix now.
Yeah.
The orbs. But I think we are looking at drones.
Yeah, yeah.
I do. Same. I personally feel like most of what people are seeing are drones. And a lot of people are seeing airplanes and helicopters and thinking they're drones at this point.
Yeah, it's a pretty common thing that's happening.
But in regard to the nature of the beings piloting the craft, this gets very complex. Because you're probably not just dealing with one kind of thing.
Sure.
Now, we can be specific to gray aliens, and everybody knows what a gray alien is. It's the typical little, you know, not the green.
Big head.
Not the green Martians, not
this
like that.
This but gray.
That but gray.
Yeah.
So they have the large bulbous heads with the almond-shaped black eyes, like that stuffed animal there. and the grays, and I'm going to tell you this, matter-of-factly, the grays are real. 100% real.
I mean, thousands of people have seen them.
Yes, they are real. The gray aliens are real.
Oh no!
and
I've never thought it. Like I've just never convinced myself of it.
They are now. What exactly they are? You know, there's a lot of speculation out there. Most of what we know about gray aliens comes from the alien abduction material.
Sure.
Right.
And the alien abduction material. This is not fiction. That material is. There's a body of evidence. That has every kind of evidence that you could prove a case in court with. It's got physical evidence, anecdotal evidence. You know, there's all kinds of proof associated with alien abduction that is undeniable. And I don't want to go way down the alien abduction rabbit hole here, but that's where we have a lot of material related to the gray aliens, and many, many people have encountered them. I have friends. Or abductees who have encountered the grays. One of my friends actually reached out and strangled one until she was deactivated.
Oh my gosh!
I say deactivated because abductees are implanted, and they're usually in a sedated, let's say, before the grays show up to recover them. Not always, but I would say most of the time they're already incapacitated. So gray aliens are real, and there's a lot we could say about that. By the way, David Grush said as much in his testimony that biologicals have been recovered associated with these crash retrievals.
Right.
Non-human biologicals. We're talking about gray aliens here. That's the primary group, I think, that's operating in our airspace. It's not the only group. And this gets, I don't know what direction you guys want to go with this conversation,
it's free flowing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's several groups. I consider myself a ufologist, which just means I'm a UFO researcher, and I interface with UFO researchers who I have a great deal of respect for, such as Richard Dolan. I have friends in the community, and I have studied the abduction phenomenon, and. When you research, and I'm not talking about just going on the internet and typing in aliens or alien abduction.
That's all we do.
I'm talking about the old school.
Yeah.
The old school UFO and abduction material. I'm talking about guys who were doing this when it wasn't cool. But way before the internet, when you actually had to go to libraries and you had to track people down, you had to get witness testimony and, more than a few of these individuals were killed, lost their lives in the pursuit, and murdered. They didn't just fall off a cliff. They were pushed off a cliff or whatever.
Golly.
And so it's a very serious topic. And the research, the old school ufological research, is very, very good. In fact, the abduction material lends itself to scientific inquiry precisely because it has all of the evidence that you could prove a court and case. I'm talking about abductees come back with all kinds of markings on their bodies. They're physically absent during an abduction episode. Yeah. They're gone. They're not there anymore. Sometimes neighbors see them being abducted. Sometimes,
what does that look like?
There's a famous case. There's a documentary on Netflix right now.
Oh, the Manhattan one?
The Manhattan alien abduction.
Yeah.
I happen to believe that story is true. That was a case that was researched by the great Bud Hopkins, the late great Bud Hopkins. Bud was a phenomenal field investigator. He investigated alien abduction. And that was one of the most remarkable cases, because here's a woman, Linda is her name. She was abducted in the middle of New York City.
Yeah.
And there were
saw it.
There were 20 plus witnesses to this abduction. A couple of individuals actually saw her levitating out the window up into the craft. And it's a very well documented case, but it's one of many thousands. In fact, I would say there are millions of abductees around the world, and they all basically experience the same thing. And so the old school ufological material is very good, very solid. I think the conclusions that were drawn are still conclusive today in regard to the nature of the phenomenon.
Yeah.
And so that's why, if you ask me, how could I be so confident that gray aliens are real? Well, that's why. I mean, if you familiarize yourself with this material, if you're a logical thinking person and you approach it in a serious manner, and you read through not just the abduction material, the material from the good old school ufologists, you can only draw one conclusion when you're done. The phenomenon is real.
Yeah.
Abductions are real. Gray aliens are real. Now, there's a realm of speculation here revolving around the nature of the beings and how many different kinds there are out there. Now,
let's just go with the grays. So in the grand scheme of things, like, you are first and foremost a believer in Christ, mm-hmm. and you've written an amazing book, and I just, like, what do you think in the grand scheme of just humanity,
cosmos.
The cosmos, yeah. like aliens, fallen angels, all that stuff, what do you think that the gray aliens are?
I think that all familiar with the little grays.
Right.
Right. But the little guys are likely manufactured. They're probably some kind of,
like, an android
cybernetic kind of drone. Yeah.
Like an AI.
Like a pet.
Bot.
Like a design pet.
Yeah.
Like to do chores and like to go on tasks and
actually,
stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. They are created to fulfill a very particular function. I would say that it's possible that they even lack the quality of free will. They're biological. They die. When they die, it's pretty grotesque. I mean, it's...
But it's almost like the transhumanism kind of thing, right? To where it's like maybe half biological.
It may be, yeah. It may be that they are part biological and part cybernetic. So a combination of those two things. There's certainly a biological component there. Because as I said, they die, and when they die, it doesn't look like, you know, circuit boards and wires. It's flesh. But the grays are manufactured, in my opinion, and in the opinion of many ufologists. Grays are manufactured. I think they're clones. So cybernetic clones. So the question is, who's manufacturing them?
Yeah.
And the answer is actually...
Democrats.
That's it. That's it.
No.
The answer is actually forthcoming in the abduction material, because you realize that the grays aren't the only kind of entity on board the craft.
Oh, okay.
Associated with the grays, the little guys are what the late, well, no, he's still alive. So let me say that again. Well.
He might be late sometimes.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So let me make this statement more accurate. What probably the premier abduction researcher, Dr. David Jacobs, has denominated as the insectolins. And Jacobs is still alive. Dr. Jacobs is still alive.
But could be late sometimes.
I'm sure he's late.
Yeah.
Tardy.
On occasion.
We all tardy are. Sauce, that guy.
So he denominates these other beings who are associated with the little guys, insectolins, because they look somewhat like a praying mantis. They're tall, 6.5, 7 foot tall. They're very thin. They have spindly limbs and fingers.
Hate it.
They're humanoid, right? They have two arms and two legs, but they're also very exotic. They're more exotic looking than the little grays. And again, they're called insect. Jacobs denominates them insectolins because their heads are even more. Their heads look something like a praying mantis, but or like a. I always forget the terminology here. Like a, because we don't use them anymore. What do you call the things where you put the coins in when you park your car?
Oh,
parking
a
meter.
Parking meter. Yeah, yeah.
You know, kind of like a parking meter shape, but with larger, more bulbous eyes. Their eyes protrude from their faces more. I think that's actually the organic species. They are manufacturing the little guys.
Well, then where does that fit in with what we believe?
I'll get to that in a second. Like, you know what's interesting?
You're leading it up. You've done this before.
If you watch the Star Wars movies, it's interesting. Who makes the clones? Remember, I don't remember what they're called, but they're tall, spindly.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kind of insect-looking, that race. I think the inspiration actually for that was actually the insectolin, the abduction material. I think that's the organic species. When I say organic, I mean we're looking at a species of some kind there. They have extremely potent telepathic capabilities. The little guys do, but especially the insectolin. So that's one faction. We can lump that group, the small guys and the tall ones, the insectolins and the grays, into a faction, and we can call that faction the grays. That is a faction that is undoubtedly operating in our airspace and has bases under the ground and under the ocean.
Shout out.
And I can say that with a great deal of confidence.
Why? Is it people that you know?
Why can I say that with a great deal of confidence?
Yeah.
Yes.
The vast amount of...
Because of what I said previously, the material.
Right, okay.
Ufological material, including the abduction material, plus...
Yeah, sure.
Plus my own interaction with abductees who come to me, quite a few.
Okay, yeah.
And their stories are perfectly synchronized with all of the material that I'm familiar with.
I only ask that because if you say... that you can guarantee it. Now I'm going to start saying I can guarantee it.
By proxy.
Because Tim Alberino's guarantees it.
And I, again, this high degree of confidence is in regard to the existence of gray aliens.
Sure.
Now there's a lot of things in ufology that I speculate about, but I don't have that same degree of confidence.
Right.
Have you guys heard of Bob Lazar?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So Bob Lazar, I 100% believe Bob Lazar's story. 100%. Okay. For many reasons, but I'm absolutely.
I mean, he was talking about before it was
back in
even a thing.
Late 80s, early 90s, Lazar came out to George Knapp, who I have a great deal of respect for as well.
Yeah, he's awesome.
And Lazar, we don't have to go deep into Lazar's story, but basically Lazar worked at the S-4 facility, which is...
close to Area 51, right?
Part of Groom Lake, yeah, and it's close to Area 51, about 15 minutes south of Area 51 and near Groom Lake. It's actually right on the Papoose dry lake bed. And... the S-4 facility is an underground facility, but it has a hangar bays that were built, covertly built into the side of a mountain. So you couldn't really distinguish that they were hangar bays until they opened. And Lazar was tasked to work on a particular craft. And he called it in his book, he wrote a phenomenal book called Dreamland. And he calls this craft, he gave it the nickname of the sports model, because there were several alien craft that were housed in this facility in the hangar bays, but some of them were in a state of ruin. They were not, they were non-functioning. They looked like they were crash retrievals, but this one was pristine, functioning. Mm. And it was your typical saucer type craft. And it was very sleek. That's why he called it the sports model. And he was specifically tasked to work on the reactor. The craft had a reactor.
Yeah.
And we can get in, if you want, we can get into the details of the reactor. But what's very interesting is that Lazar describes the interior of the craft as being
like
designed
smooth,
for
right?
very diminutive people, gray aliens.
Yeah.
And in fact, he said that the personnel at S4 described the occupants of the craft, they had a nickname for them. They called them the kids. Hmm. Now, why would they call them the kids?
Yeah.
Because they're very small.
Yeah.
They're gray aliens, okay? That's just anecdotal, right? There's a lot of this that when you add it all up, I mean, the existence of gray aliens is undeniable. It really is. Now, to your earlier question, like, how do you fit all of this into a biblical worldview? Well, that's a very long conversation. How far back do we want to go? So I suppose this is necessary at this point. So from a biblical perspective, I think we need to ask the question, does the Bible, how do I want to phrase this? I'm trying to think how I phrase this in my book. Does the Bible preclude, let's say, let's start on the negative. Does, with a negative proposition, does the Bible preclude the possibility of extraterrestrial life? In other words, can we open the Bible and read it and then draw the conclusion, no, there's no extraterrestrial life. Is that possible? I think that the answer to that is no, it's not. It's impossible.
Right. Yeah.
I believe that when you read the scriptures, that the narrative presumes, rather than precludes, it presumes the existence of extraterrestrial beings and extraterrestrial life. What do I mean? Because clearly human beings are not the only sentient beings in the universe.
Right. Sure. And that's in scripture.
Right. So
yeah.
I mean, we have these things called angels. And the word angel is not, it doesn't describe the nature of a being. It's a occupational descriptor. It just describes what that entity does. And it's not even used exclusively of non-human beings in the Bible. It's also used of human beings. It's malach in Hebrew and angelos in Greek. And it just means a messenger, an envoy, one who is sent. That's all it means. So the Bible does something very interesting. It doesn't give us any insight into these beings, but it does let us know unequivocally that they exist.
Right.
And it also lets us know, it also informs us, not only do they exist, they pre-exist us,
mm-hmm.
and they are non-terrestrial.
Right.
And that is...
I mean, that's pretty good evidence.
That is
yeah.
that is conclusive in the biblical yeah. narrative. Okay, so these beings who are not us, who the Bible describes as angels, definitely, biblically speaking, pre-exist us, and they are non-terrestrial. In other words, they are not from the earth. We know this as a matter of fact. If you read the book of Job, for example, you read that the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy when God was forming the earth or reforming the earth.
Oh.
However you have it. However you would have it. I personally believe reforming the earth in that context. And so right there, that statement alone, we could derive just from that statement that there is an angelic race of beings who were around a lot longer than we were, because in that context, the human beings are not on the scene yet. Adam yeah. and Eve haven't been created.
Well, even the simpler part is like Genesis, where it says, let us create man in our image.
That's right.
Our own image, you know.
And R is the Elohim, by the way.
Yeah, which Elohim precludes... I'm trying to use big words like Tim. Elohim also refers to just not just God, because God is Yahweh Elohim, right?
Yes.
So Elohim right. is just the angels,
that's
the
right.
sons of God.
Yeah, the late Dr. Heiser would describe that as the divine council. I would say that the Elohim are the sons of God. That there's a family.
Yeah.
This is something that if you read the Bible carefully, you realize that there is a family. There's a divine family. And Adam was supposed to be, he was a member of that family. And he was the son of God, according to the genealogy of Jesus of Nazareth. So you have a family, and you think of it in terms of a kingdom, because this is the way we're supposed to think of it, right? So it's a kingdom. There's a king. That king has a council. Now he is supreme. He's the head of the council, but he has a council. And the council deliberates on matters pertaining to different things, including pertaining to us. There's a scene in the book of Daniel where you have the haughty king Nebuchadnezzar, who is being judged, but he's not being judged in this scene by human beings. And he's not just being judged by God or Yahweh. Rather, in Daniel, he's being judged by the council of the holy watchers.
Oh.
In the book of Daniel. Now, this is not extra-biblical. This is the book of Daniel.
Yeah.
Nebuchadnezzar is being judged by a council of watchers. This is the divine court. This is the court of heaven. Now, the king is sitting at the head of the court, so it's the king and his court that are passing judgment on Nebuchadnezzar. But the point is that there's a court, there's a council, and these beings are the sons of God that pre-exist us. They're members of this, I would describe it as a race. In fact, in my book Birthright, I denominate this race as the elder race.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why, there's some inspiration from Tolkien there.
Viewers, go read the book Birthright. It's rad. I read it and it was dope.
It's
really fun and it's really interesting.
Yeah, I elaborate on all of these topics in the book. And so once you realize that God has a council, so it's not just God sitting up there by himself. There's these other beings. And these other beings, by the way, are not just spiritual beings. These are very physical beings. How do we know they're physical beings? Because we encounter them in the narrative of the Bible. And when I say the narrative, I'm talking about the historical narrative of the Bible. The Bible, of course, has all kinds of literary genres in it, right? It's got allegory, it's got poems, it's got all kinds of different genres. But it also has a historical narrative. And so when we talk about the historical narrative, we actually encounter these beings in that context.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that there's angels that are seen in the prophetic content and visions and dreams and so forth. And that a lot of that can be interpreted symbolically. But when you encounter one of these beings showing up in the narrative, that's a different story.
Mm.
For example, you have angels who visit Abraham.
Yeah.
And Abraham prepares food for them and they eat it. They drink and eat with Abraham.
Bread and wine.
And then they do so with Lot as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, they said they were beautiful, right? And it wasn't like they were these other creatures that it was normal. It was the way they were talking. It was like a normal everyday person.
I got to pee.
Good, because I got to shoot some more of this in my mouth.
Okay.
My mouth is getting dry. You want some? Well,
speaking of mouth getting dry.
Speaking of mouth getting dry, we got that. Don't go anywhere.
Sunday cool swag.
Sunday cool swag.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
SundayCoolSwag.com.
Where you get all of the merch.
Shirts, hats, and stickers.
And all of the above, like ninjas and butterfly socks.
There's nothing better.
Nothing better.
Than Sunday Cool Swag.
Sunday Cool Swag.
So go right now and get your bag.
Sunday Cool Swag.
Sunday Cool Swag.
Sunday Cool Swag.
It's the cinematic event of the year. Critics say incredible, jaw-dropping, action-packed with savings.
You're talking about Thunderbolts?
No, Sergey, it's 2-for-1 cinema tickets from Compensa Market. A wonderful offer.
So?
That you can use to see Marvel Studios Thunderbolts only in cinemas.
Woohoo! I'll get the popcorn.
Get 2-for-1 cinema tickets every Tuesday or Wednesday with Compare the Market. Simples!
When you take out a qualifying product to Compare the Market, one membership per year, participating cinemas, 2 standard tickets only, cheap as free. T's and C's apply.
Come!
Very good. do you guys want to devolve into
defecation
jokes? Feel free to do it.
Oh, yeah.
We're devolving into something very shortly.
Golly, man. I had so much fun on that ad.
That ad was fun.
I had fun. Did you guys have fun?
It's a little scary.
That was great.
You had fun in the ad, right?
Which ad?
Oh. No.
Classic Timothy.
Classic Tim.
Yeah.
So we did cut you off, but it's like every question you just have a plethora of just.
I can appreciate how you're answering questions too, because it's not just like
it's one line answer.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, these are very complex topics.
I know, sure. We're not complex people, so we ask.
I know, literally, just my last sentence that I said right before the break. I was like, "What am I saying? I can't even say anything."
That's why we do the yes or no's.
Should we do poop story and then real and then?
Poopy time with Tim and Alberino.
Where it's poopy all the time.
This is the segment in which we get really, really intellectual.
Yes, absolutely. This is the nitty gritty.
We're going deep right now.
Welcome to Ninjas and Butterflies.
Speaking of complex situations,
I would say that's the pooping times can be the most complex of situations.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is there any biblical talks of people pooping and having biblical moments?
Excrement.
It was it Ehud?
Oh, Ehud, dude, the left-hand guy. That was awesome.
Didn't his bowel spill out or something?
Yeah, was he
sitting on the toilet? Or
yes, he was. That's the thing.
Oh, was it?
In Old Testament history, I remember this in class, they talked about how kings had their rooms back then. So the guards were on the outside, and then that's when they thought something was wrong, so they go in. But apparently the only way out would have been going through the actual toilet. So it's like, that's crazy.
And so they had modern-day plumbing then.
Yeah, and he was left-handed, so that's when they checked for daggers or anything.
Which is
so
dumb,
they checked
right?
on the wrong side. Say what? What was dumb?
It's dumb that they wouldn't be like, oh, you're right-handed, obviously, so we're just going to check this side.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, I'm left-handed.
This
so
is
they
perfect.
Just like, let's just pat down this side.
They said,
you're good.
Was it on the inner thigh? When he put it on his inner thigh, I think?
Not
I
sure.
You guys are strangely knowledgeable about this topic.
It's a fascinating story. I
went to Bible college for a semester, so
I can tell.
I preached
Thank
that.
You.
I preached that sermon and I called it "Lefty Kills Hefty."
Nice.
Yeah.
Andrew and Andy both went to Bible college. Graduated.
I didn't graduate.
Oh, never mind.
I dropped out. I went for 3 years and then I realized I'm already in the job that I'm going to college for. So I'm like, I'm not going to go into debt.
I dropped out of high school. So
hey, shout out.
And you got deported from Europe, right?
I did. I got deported from England.
Yeah, like literally 18.
From London.
Right after high school. That's awesome.
Does it involve your poop story?
No.
Oh, okay. That would have been really cool.
No. All right.
The biggest poop England's ever seen. And
I'm
just
afraid
like,
I'm going to disappoint you.
Get out of here.
Not a chance.
You can't.
Not a chance. All right. Let's hear it.
Well, you prefaced last night.
There's not much to say about it.
We said both ends. Was it both ends?
Both ends of the story.
Both ends of the story.
I am somewhat famous in my family for having defecated in a swimming pool when I was a kid.
How old were you?
You know what? I'm pretty proud of it, too. Hey,
all right.
How old? Like 16?
And that's all I got, so.
you said something last night.
No, I was probably five. I don't know. Six, five, maybe. I don't recall.
Was it intentional?
No, it was not.
Okay. Was it messy or was it like, oh, let's just get the fishnet? Because, I mean, like...
I don't know. I went inside. Okay. When the cleanup operation...
Threw the grenade and left. That's awesome.
But you said
one of the accomplishments in my life, I think, is having defecated in a swimming pool.
Yeah. I think everyone should try it.
And yeah. Real,
they should.
Real talk, I know people who have tried to defecate in water, and I watched my brother's face. I'll just call him out. It was my brother. I'm going to tell the story. We're at youth camp. They thought it all be funny to go up current from all of the kids in the water in Panama City Beach. And they thought it would be funny for all the dudes to drop turds and then to follow the turds through the crowd.
Classic.
That
and
is
so
funny.
A bunch of dudes did it. And I remember my brother trying and then like stopping with panic on his face. And he's like, I'm scared. And so he like turtled and then literally pinched it off and like ran back to the dude.
I've pooped in the ocean twice.
Oh, that's
really?
And it's the
it is
the weirdest experience ever.
Why'd you have to poop in the ocean?
Well, we were tarpon fishing. And
you couldn't get off the boat. Yeah, because they don't.
On the west coast of Florida. Or no, we were on the, there's no bathroom.
Yeah.
Like, dude, I have
the ocean is the bathroom.
Yeah. Everything's a bathroom if you're brave enough.
So I went and swam out, pooped, and I'm just like, I don't know how I feel about this.
No, dude, I'm so sorry, ocean life.
I wouldn't have any problem with that.
My brother was worried he was creating a vacuum and to replace what left, the entire Gulf of Mexico would rush in.
Yeah.
Pooping in the ocean should be called a Moana, too.
I can tell you this. I can tell you this. You never, if you're ever in the jungle, the Amazon jungle, you never want to pee in
stuff
the water.
Can go up it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
that's
no.
What is it? I just remember that was something you can't do. But
it's called a vampire catfish.
It's the most terrifying thing in the world.
And that's another hybrid of the grays.
It's called, in Peru, we call them caneros. And there's,
I'm gonna stick with
they're
catfish.
Small, slender fish with barbs on their body. And they will enter any available orifice.
And that means because they have barbs, you can't pull out.
Oh,
and the
bar, no!
And the bars are and the barbs are like, you know, they're going in the reverse direction,
right.
A fish hook.
Yeah.
A horseshoe crab.
They'll enter any orifice. So
very
you
good.
You do not pee in the water in the jungle, ever.
Always not
well,
in it.
It's actually pretty tragic. I mean, I've seen, for both males and females, when I was... One time going up into the jungle, there was a doctor. I forget if he was on my boat or if he was on a boat behind us. He was going up to one of the villages because there was a girl who had one inserted into her private parts.
Oh, no.
Because she peed in the water.
That's terrible,
my gosh.
Dude.
And
how big do they get?
You have to surgically remove them.
Oh, vampire catfish. No, thank you.
Yeah, don't type in vampire catfish on Google images.
Kids,
no,
don't.
It's you don't pee in the water in the Amazon.
Yeah, into it.
Isn't there something somewhere that can, not just being in the water, but can travel up the stream?
That's the vampire catfish.
Like, okay, you don't have to be like in some...
I've never heard of it coming out of the water. But
that's like peeing on an electric fence.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's something somewhere that can literally travel faster than the rate at which the stream is leaving the body.
It might be, maybe the vampire
like don't,
catfish.
Like,
can
don't
do
even
that.
Like pee on a puddle.
How maybe. Fast is pee?
I would say close to the speed of light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
Depends on how far back the last, rest stop was.
Yeah.
I have another story that's related to
the other end.
The other
right?
end. Right.
Yes.
Because I have a lot more stories about that.
I would love to hear that.
I was living in the jungle with this family on the River Masan, up the River Masan in the Peruvian Amazon. And it was, you know, very rugged conditions. They're kind of like my jungle family, this family. Funny story. Their kids, they had three boys and a girl. And the father, I don't even know his real name. Everybody just called him Paisano. So I call him Paisano.
What does that mean?
It means countryman, you know, Paisan in Italian, and then in Spanish it's Paisano.
Paisano.
Everybody called him Paisano, and he really liked tequila a lot. And I was really good friends with Paisano and his family. And his children were all named, well, I'll just tell you, his oldest son was named Grover, mm-hmm. after the Sesame Street character.
That's awesome.
His next son in line was named Mike Tyson.
No way.
Not just Mike or Tyson, Mike Tyson.
First then name.
The next boy is named, naturally, Michael Jackson.
Oh, man.
No way.
Yeah, we called him Jacko, Michael Jackson. And then the girl got shafted. Her name was Gina. But Gina. I was with this family. Spent a lot of time with them out there in the middle of the jungle. And we were on the river, on the bank of the river. And one day, it was evening, and I'm down there at the bank of the river doing something. I don't remember what I was doing. I fished a lot over there with them. And I see this boat coming down the river. And there's this gentleman perched on the front of it. And he's got sunglasses on. He's got a military crew cut. He's kind of dressed in military-type clothing, and he's got a bunch of guys with him. Very rugged-looking dude. He looked like what I would imagine that a drug trafficker would look like.
Oh, interesting.
And come down the river. And by the way, on this river up there, there's nothing. There's nothing. It's just jungle. And he gets to the shore. He gets to the shore and disembarks at Paisano's house where I'm standing. So I'm standing on the shore. And, of course, here I am, 19-year-old kid, dreadlocks at the time.
Nice.
And everybody who encounters me in the jungle is baffled. And then I open my mouth and talk, and I can speak. Not only do I speak Spanish, I speak their dialect of Spanish, which is equivalent to, like, redneck English. I don't know.
Okay,
it's
yeah.
It's okay. Redneck. It's sure. What I would call redneck Spanish. And it's a jungle dialect. And so he gets off the boat and he looks at me. And he's kind of laughing with his guy. He's like, who is this? He said, what are you doing here, gringo? Who are you?
My boy, the dreadlocks.
He was a very imposing man.
Yeah.
And I don't remember what I told him, but he goes, I forget how this happened, so I'm trying to put the pieces together in my head, but he had with him, I forgot to mention this detail. You remember those, you ever see those jugs, like with the netting around them, like pirate jugs, and you put your finger and you swing it over your shoulder and take a swig?
Oh, yeah.
He had one of those in his hand.
Cool.
And it had like the netting around it, and it had a little finger hole. And
were they just a...
And so he's standing there, like, just observing me. He was kind of amused, you know, to encounter me there. And he goes, here. He goes, drink this if you're a man. And he shoves it at me. And I'm thinking, oh, it's tequila, whatever. Because everybody brings Paisano tequila. And I looked in. And I said, what is it? He said, look inside. So I looked inside the bottle. And there were probably, I don't want to exaggerate, 3 to 5 dead poisonous snakes inside. Venomous snakes.
Come on now.
3 to 5 venomous snakes inside.
What?
There was definitely what's called a jergon in the jungle, which is I always get this confused. I think it's a fer-de-lance snake.
Oh.
There was a green venomous tree snake. There was 3 to 5. Various, and they weren't real big. They were small enough to fit in a bottle.
I think one's enough.
But they were not pieces of a snake. The entire snake in the alcohol.
It was like fermenting in it.
The alcohol, and it was just straight like tequila or cane alcohol. It would have been cane alcohol, sugar cane alcohol. And I said, "Why are there snakes in this bottle? Why are there?" He said, "Those are venomous snakes. This is called bibora chada." And he said, "This is what men drink." Are you a man?
Not today.
Let's find out. So I drank it. And it just tasted like straight alcohol. But I mean, I drank it. It tasted like tequila or something. And I didn't think nothing of it. They all laughed, him and his guys. He patted me on the shoulder and took the jug.
Always a good sign.
They went up to the hut, and they were just having a good time up there with Paisano, drinking their tequila and stuff. And so I didn't think anything of it, but about 15 minutes after I drank that stuff, my chest started to burn really bad.
I wonder why.
It was just on fire, like really bad. And white foam started coming out of my mouth.
Bro.
Oh, no.
And so I'm like, I'm not puking, okay? I'm not puking, but I'm doubled over. And this foam is just coming out of my mouth, and my chest is, it feels like I'm burning a hole in my esophagus.
Oh my gosh.
It was really painful.
Because you were?
I was really painful. I went up to the hut, and they're all laughing, and
they're all watching,
playing
you
their
this?
Music and smoking cigars and cigarettes. And I walked up there and sat down with them, and I was like, why is this stuff burning a hole in my chest? Is this normal? And I was in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
And they all just started laughing. And he said, "You probably got a little bit too much venom."
Oh my God, dude.
And so then they proceeded to tell me that the reason why they drink this is because this is why they would put a variety of snakes in there. The venom from the snakes slowly seeps into the alcohol. And when you drink it, over time, it gradually inoculates you.
Oh, like an anti-immunity.
Yeah, so that if you get hit by a snake, your body can deal with it much more efficiently. Now, I don't think it's not a cure, but it prepares your body for the venom in advance.
It wouldn't shock your body as
much
as
why they
would.
Drink it. Plus, they just like the tequila, but that's why they drink it. And they were laughing. They said, you probably just got too much venom.
They also probably use it to power their boats.
Probably. Yeah.
It's just straight alcohol. So it really was quite painful, probably for a good 45 minutes. It's just constantly white foam coming out of my mouth.
Were you scared you were going to die?
No, I didn't think I was going to die, but it was very painful.
Have you tested a snake since?
No.
Dang. Bring him in.
So anyway, I drank Biwarachala. And it was very painful.
That is scary. I would probably be having a panic attack at that point. Yeah. I think I would be dying. Yeah. They would just be laughing at me, and I would just be panicking.
I mean, they didn't seem to be very concerned, so I wasn't. Yeah. After a while, I just dealt with the pain. It went away, 45 minutes or so.
Now, how dangerous are truly those jungles? Average man gets dropped in the jungle.
You're dead.
Really?
You're dead.
Really?
If you get dropped far enough into the jungle, you're dead.
What's killing you first?
You'll get lost.
Lost, okay.
You get turned around in the Amazon. Everything looks the same. It's not like here where you have big trees and small trees and landmarks. In the Amazon, everything looks the same.
It's just copy and paste everywhere.
And it's flat, and it is exceedingly thick undergrowth. And everything wants to eat you in there. Sounds like a good time, doesn't it?
I mean, it's amazing.
Sounds intense. I love it.
I mean, even the bees are carnivorous. In the Amazon.
What?
Yeah, I would have... the bees were one of the worst torments for me. And I enjoyed being in the Amazon, by the way. I was there by choice. But mosquitoes were always a nuisance. The bees were worse because I would have like a cut on my arm. I'd always have some open wound from whatever in the jungle. I remember I had this open wound on my arm. And during the day, the mosquitoes subside and the bees come. If you're around the river, if you're on the bank of the river, the bees come. And the bees will land on your arm, and there are these little bees, and they will yank at your flesh. Like they'll bite off a piece and yank it off.
What?
So you constantly have bees pulling little pieces of your open wound away.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And it was, and they also sting you, but the sting isn't really bad. They're like miniature.
Yeah, but when they're eating your flesh off, that sounds.
Yeah, it's not it, very was, awesome. It was. That drove me crazy. But everything wants to eat you in the Amazon. I mean, I killed a huge electric eel one time. And that's the most dangerous thing in the water.
When you say huge, how big?
From the end of that chair to the end of this couch.
What?
So like a good almost 10, 15 feet.
Yeah, probably 7 feet, I'd say.
I said 10, 15.
And I know it had to be that 50 big.
Feet.
Because
50,000 feet?
Well, we were walking. I was walking with Michael Jackson.
Yeah. Jacko.
I was walking with Michael Jackson in the jungle, and we were crossing a stream. So the stream's pouring into the river, but the river was low, so the stream got cut off from the river. And as we're crossing it, we're crossing a log, and I looked down, and I said, Jacko, there's an eel. And he said, oh, we got to kill it. We got to kill it, because if someone steps into that little pool of water, it was probably just knee high, maybe thigh high, and that eel shocks you, which it would. That's a problem.
Oh, wow.
Electric eels are deadly, deadly. And the reason why they're deadly is not so much in this case, it would just be very
painful,
painful, bad experience, but... Jacko was saying it can kill you. We got to get rid of this. It can kill somebody. But if you're in the river, and the eels as they're hunting, they're shooting out an electric pulse, and it hits the fish. The fish get stunned and float to the top, and then the eels come and eat them. So it's indiscriminate. Oh, they also use it as a defense mechanism. So if you're in the way as an eel comes by and you get hit, you'll drown.
Yeah, you'll fix it.
You just drown. Cool. In fact, there was a guy in the village who he was all mangled. His skin was sort of crispy. It melted. Like his skin looked like it was melted on his face. And what happened to him was he was fishing in the river, the hand line.
Yeah.
And he caught an electric eel on it. He didn't mean to. Electric eel got on the end of his line and just electrocuted him through the line.
What?
And he was
deformed. It melted his face?
Yeah, he was deformed. His face was like droopy and so anyway, this head was huge. This electric, it was like that big,
bro.
And I said, Jackal, throw me your machete, because I had a machete in my pocket, but I had a wooden handle, and it wrapped with the wooden handle wrapped with copper. Mm. And now that I think about it, copper isn't a good conductor, is it? I probably should have used my, but I wasn't thinking at the time. I think copper is a very bad conductor of electricity, is it not? I may have that backwards.
Ask a redneck. I don't know.
I think copper is a bad conductor of electricity. I think I got that right. But anyway.
I know it sells for a lot on the street.
I wasn't sure.
That's what I've heard.
I wasn't sure, you know, my wooden handle. And so I said, hey, throw me your machete. He had a plastic handle. I thought I'd probably be better off the plastic handle. So I positioned myself above the eel. The eel's head was in like right there, and I was on a log above it. And I whacked this thing with this machete. I'm going to kill it in one stroke. And I sunk the machete into its head. And it was literally like sticking my finger into the socket, into a
no
socket.
No way.
I was, I mean, it was intense. And it was, thank God that the machete went flying out of my hand.
Yeah.
But it was seriously like sticking my finger in the socket. That's
no
what it
way,
felt like.
Dude.
It nailed me. And Jackal just was, you know, laughing. But he's
that's
like,
insane. For the record, copper is highly conductive.
He said, He said, That's not how you kill a.
Well, how do they kill him?
An electric eel. I said, well, why didn't you tell me that before I did it? He was just laughing. He wanted to see that happen. So
you pour the snake alcohol on it?
No, you cut little, we cut little spears and you spear it.
Oh, that makes sense.
And then we were spearing. It took a lot to kill five of them.
He's like, you shoot it.
And we would touch. They don't use bullets. They don't have to because. I mean, they have guns, but the bullets, they
it's a commodity.
It's a commodity. So, yeah. So we had like five spears sticking in it, and if you touched them, you'd get zapped. And as it was dying, it was less and less until eventually we could grab it. And we hauled it out of the water. We pulled it out of the water. That's how I know it was that big. And both of us had to do it together. We lifted it out on the spear. So it's like spigoted on the spear, and we lifted it over our shoulder, and the head was right here. And I got it speared, and he's carrying the tail. And if I were just to carry it myself, and I'm 6 foot tall, 6'1", the head was here and the tail was dragging. That's how I know that it was that big. And we're carrying it, and we carried it to the end of the, we carried it up to the river, and we stuck the spear in the ground. So you have this big eel,
yeah,
you know, skewered there on the river. And here comes Paisano in his canoe. And I said, Paisano! We got lunch because we ate everything that moved.
Yeah, so was that good eating?
He went,
no.
No. Nope. He said, nope. No, Paisano, we don't eat that, he told me.
No way.
That's the one thing?
I said, why not? Like, I was all excited to eat it.
Yeah.
He said, it's the mother of malaria. We don't eat it.
So oh!
They believe, they have a superstitious belief that the electric eel is the mother of malaria.
Timothy's already like a couple bites in. You're like, wait, what?
I've had malaria 5 times, but
that's shocking.
Get ready for number 6.
But I'm actually going back there in March with my nephew. So there you go, Jordan.
Hey,
hey.
But
wait, has he been behind me the whole time?
I don't know who that is,
dude. What the?
Hello. All right.
Anyway, we ate everything in the jungle, so I assumed we were going to eat that. I've eaten all manner of monkey. I've eaten stingrays. I've eaten sloths. I've eaten toucans. I've
sloths?
Eaten parrots. I've eaten eagles. I've eaten
eagles.
Turtles.
What?
I've eaten crocodiles.
What's some of your favorites? What's the worst?
I've eaten, the worst was an anteater.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Sloth didn't taste great either, but the anteater was, it just tasted like you would think an anteater would taste like bitter. I didn't like an anteater that
what
much.
I was just literally slurping on ants earlier, literally.
What about like, things that crawl, like little bugs and stuff.
I think I've had snake, boa. The best, some of the monkeys taste really good, depending on the species. I've eaten a variety of monkey species all the time, and that's what we would all the
that's
time.
That's amazing.
That is
I want to try some monkey.
I mean, we would eat everything. Everything and anything. I mean, they knew that I was a meat eater. I'm a meat eater. So they would, and Grover was a hunter. Apart from living in a trash can on Sesame Street, he was a hunter, and so anything we shot, we ate.
Mike Tyson was a fighter.
Mike Tyson actually was. He came back one day. I don't know. I'm taking a lot of time telling stories, but Mike Tyson came back one day, I'm sitting at Paisano's house. And again, this is the middle of the jungle, but the river keeps going. So, and yeah. I've been all the way at the end of that sucker. It's serious jungle, intense. And it's nighttime. Paisano's not home right now. I forget where he was. He wasn't home, but he was coming home. And Tyson showed up, and Tyson just looked really depressed, really depressed. And he sat down at the table in his hut. And that, you know, the hut's on stilts on the side of the river. And I'm like, Tyson, what's the problem? What's wrong? He's like, oh, I can't even remember what they call me. I think they call me Masan out there in the jungle. Masan, because I was this gringo living on the river Masan. So he's like, Masan, I'm in big trouble. I'm in big trouble. And he was really, really nervous. He's like, when my dad gets home, he's going to kill me. He's going to kill me with a machete. I'm like, what happened? He said, I lost his gun. I lost his shotgun. And their shotguns were held together by rope. So, I mean, it's not like some nice shotgun. It's an old shotgun falling apart. But to them, it's very valuable.
Yeah.
He's like, I lost my dad's shotgun. I am dead. I said, how did you lose the shotgun? He said, well, I was up the river hunting, and I'm walking in the woods with the shotgun. And I'm, you know, he's trying to hunt Sahino, the wild pig or monkeys or something. And he said, all of a sudden, I hear a growl, and I look up, and there's a jaguar, big jaguar that's stalking me, and it's in front of him. And the jaguar, you know, like a lion when it's prowling, it's down low. And
yeah,
he said, then it sprang at him. It sprang at him and went to claw him, but there was a tree between him and the jaguar, so he was able to move out of the way, and he started booking through the jungle, and the jaguar was chasing him. And he said, and there was a little, like, he calls it a cocha, like a little lake sort of thing. Not a big lake. Cocha could mean river to like a stream, some body of water. And he said, Tim, I don't know why. He said, I don't know why I did this, but I threw the gun and jumped in the water. And the gun, I think, went in the water and sunk to the bottom. And the jaguar didn't come in the water after him. It stayed on the edge for a little bit, and he stayed in the water until the jaguar kind of lost interest and went away, because it was probably deep enough to where I think he was treading water. So it was deep enough to where he was treading water. And then for whatever reason, jaguars do go into the water, but for whatever reason, it decided not to go in the water after him.
Probably the gun. Maybe it was like, just like, oh, you don't got to get anymore.
He gets out of the water. He's like, oh, thank goodness. And then a crocodile's right behind him.
Yeah, they are loaded with crocs too. But so he's trying to find this gun. He couldn't find it. That's how he lost the gun. I'm like, wait a minute. So your dad, when you tell him this story, you think he's going to be more angry about you losing the gun and less relieved about you not dying getting eaten by a jaguar? He said, Tim, I wish the jaguar would have eaten me. Oh my gosh. My dad is going to kill me.
At least they could have found the gun later. You know,
yeah. So anyway, so I know that he got chewed out really bad, but I didn't witness it happen. But
could have tried a jaguar.
Anyway, that's how this, boys and girls, is how Mike Tyson lost his gun, lost his father's gun.
That's perfect. When we do a reel for that, all the AI images have to be Michael Jackson and Mike Tyson in the jungle.
Yeah,
Dad, I lost the gun.
He's gonna kill me.
Jaguar was stalking me in the river.
Jaguar.
All the snakes.
Does he have a reel?
Oh, did you have a reel? Do you want to hit a beat?
Yeah. Andy's got a reel and he's going to show us right now.
Right now, right now, right now.
See, he didn't hear anything. So
he's like, what is happening? I sent it to Josh so he can send it out to everybody.
Tim, do you get your phone on you?
Yeah.
All right, I'm sending it in a group text, and then when I say 3, 2, 1.
Does he need audio?
Yes, headphones as well.
Oh, this looks good.
Don't click it.
What am I supposed to do? Is this a reaction video?
Yeah, basically.
It's our little segment where Andrew sends us a reel. All right, Tim, you let me know when you're ready.
I'm ready.
I'm going to click play. All right, ready? 3, 2, 1, go.
Would you rather eat 12 spiders or spend 6 weeks in a federal
prison? What are we doing? I would have 12 spiders in front of me right
which
now.
Which level is
12 spiders in front of me right now?
What are we doing?
So is that...
This is no.
What do we got here?
Uh-oh.
Eagle. Why?
Speaking of eating eagles...
What kind of spiders are those?
This is a tarantula.
Stop.
Where'd you get that?
No MSG.
Well, that's important.
Add some.
Add some.
It's not fried. It has been boiled, then dehydrated with no colors and no preservatives.
Is it furry?
It's a tarantula, so.
I'm going to hand this. Andy is under no obligation to consume.
Now, where did you get a consumable tarantula?
From the Amazon.
Did you really?
From Amazon.
Oh, from
the Amazon.
There's an important distinction there.
So, Andy, you're under no obligation. Feel free to just.
No, you are under obligation. You have to eat it. Because you said that you would.
Maybe we didn't hold it up to the camera. I should have held it up to the camera.
Did you really buy that on Amazon?
What you don't know is that we have...
It's edible?
The FBI sitting outside, and they are going to take you to prison if you do not take a bite of that.
Bro. Tim, are you going to take a bite with me?
Yeah.
I need a knife. Oh, no!
It's got to tear a slot.
It contains one zebra tarantula.
Should we
No, come on. Let me see it.
Oh, man. Okay.
Oh, wait. Allergy advisement here.
Oh, I'm allergic.
Crustaceans. There, you got it.
Yeah, I'm allergic.
You're out.
It doesn't smell bad.
No, I'm just picturing it in my mouth.
No, it's fine.
At least.
Oh, I wish I didn't look at what they look like in real life.
My goodness.
There can't
what be are we dude. Doing?
There can't be a big market for edible tarantulas. How the heck did you find this?
It wasn't cheap, but it wasn't expensive.
Oh, this is from Thailand, too.
Tim, you want a leg?
Oh, no.
A piece of it.
Okay. I'll have you and Tim eat it at the same time. No, I'm not doing it.
No, hand it to him.
Okay.
Oh, no.
So for the listeners, I mean, this thing, yeah, I don't know that I...
You can eat the torso?
No, I don't think you should eat the torso.
It smells good. It smells really good.
It doesn't smell bad. It truly does not smell
bad. No.
Are you really doing the torso? You don't have to, Andy. Just nip, like, take a nibble of a leg.
A tarantula.
Take a nibble of a leg, bro.
Let's do it.
I think we should all do it.
If you do it, I'll take a nibble.
All right, I'll do a leg.
Got to give Jordan a piece over there.
Oh, why is my heart racing?
Who?
It doesn't seem like... There's very much meat
on
this.
Hey, that's a thick boy right there. That's a thick boy.
You're biting into the torso?
Can you see the eyes? Oh, my gosh.
It's just boiled.
I'm shaking.
Yeah, it's just boiled, but it's a tarantula, Tim.
Can I chase it with water?
You ate an eagle, so.
Can I chase it with water?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can chase it with anything you want.
Chase it with bibo de chata. That seems appropriate. Yeah.
Oh no!
Oh, why is my?
But why are
fuzzy?
You bite? So why have gross. You chosen to bite into the most grotesque piece of?
Because I mean, what are we gonna do? What am I gonna do with a little tiny leg?
Yeah, it's for entertainment.
I said 12 spiders.
Hey, Josh, you're not holding yours.
Oh, you still? I'm a little afraid,
dude. Look, there's the fangs.
Okay, don't do that.
Those are the fangs. Look at the fangs. Oh my goodness!
I never I never actually see anyone eat the torso. I see them eat the...
Now I have to eat the torso.
What do you call the thing in the back? The
butt.
Whatever that's called.
Thorax?
The thorax and the legs. I've never seen anyone eat the torso.
The heck?
You know so much about spiders. Oh, okay.
Oh! Oh, man.
All right.
Dude, look at them hook around.
We got some Tony Sacheray seasoning or something in here? Cajun seasoning?
I think it smells pretty good, actually.
All right.
Actually, kind of does.
Yeah, it's almost like...
That's what I'm saying.
It's just the texture. It's gonna be dry. It's gonna taste like astronaut food.
All right,
because it's dehydrated, right?
Ready?
I'm just taking a nibble. We gotta count it down.
Should we do one at a time?
End it on me.
End it on Andy.
I'll do the thorax.
So you, me, Andy.
Do I bite the hairy end?
Just the whole thing, dude.
The whole thing. Come on.
Do you want the joint or the foot?
I bet.
Oh, that crunch! You gotta get close to the mic with that crunch.
I mean,
it's good. Yeah, tarantula's good.
All right.
I would say it's good.
There he goes, Tim.
It's good.
I'm going to spit it out, though.
Oh, man. I'm getting, like, when you step on a cockroach. Yeah,
what are the notes? What are the notes you're getting, catching right now?
You know, like, when you step on a cockroach and the top peels off, like, the body?
It tastes like sunflower seed.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's actually
the texture,
really good,
like biting into the shell of a sunflower seed.
It's like, okay, almost like a burnt sunflower seed.
Bottoms up, then.
You ate the whole thing?
Don't swallow the fangs. I would not swallow the fangs.
Why do you like them?
He's lived at the Amazon.
Those fangs are not going to be kind fangs on your stomach lining. I actually think that tastes very good.
I would say that was
you got
not
more of
bad
it?
Yeah, you feel free.
There's your thorax or whatever that is.
Slimy yet satisfying.
Hakuna Matata.
Hakuna Matata. Oh, man.
All right.
It's going to be stuck in my teeth.
Here, have a...
magic mine.
To get what's the that tarantula out of your mouth.
Golly. That's it's stuck in my... It's so flaky,
yeah,
and dry.
Yeah, drink more. Okay, I'm going to pee real quick.
Okay, that was perfect. Oh. Okay. I'm a wuss, Tim, okay?
No, you're not. No, dude.
You ate the fangs. Did you seriously eat the fangs?
I mean, yeah, they were in there. Like, they were the tucked in.
Well, they
in
might have been so dry that maybe they just...
I sure hope so. Yeah. I sure hope so. If Andrew kills me.
I quite like it.
Yeah, you got another one?
Yeah.
11 more to go? Oh, man.
It seriously tastes like sunflower seed to me. Like the shell of a sunflower seed.
How much was that on Amazon?
$25.
Oh, man. Worth every penny.
You know what's amazing? There's nothing on there. It's just boiled.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that
imagine,
it has little like
you
flavor
imagine,
to it,
you know, saucing this thing up a little bit tastes really good.
A little barbecue.
If I caught one of those in the Amazon, I would saute that, dude. You just saute it for a little while.
They don't. I
get
never
a little
seen
crisp
anyone eat the thorax. The
abdomen.
The abdomen. They bite the thorax and the legs.
Well, I recommend it. So I recommend it. Man,
this is the thorax, right? Is that what that is?
I don't know. So I was scrubbing for...
Isn't the thorax the main part of the body?
It could be.
For
the back, right? Is that what it's called? I don't know what...
It's the antenna. And what's the head called? That's just called the... So it's bug anatomy?
Anatomy. See, I'm eating the... What is this called? The back of it.
Hey, good job.
You got it. Thanks.
Well done, gentlemen.
Well done.
Yeah, the abdomen is the back. What I ate is...
The abdomen tastes pretty good.
The
you're just chewing on it like it's an appetizer?
Cephalothorax. Andy,
it's stuck in my throat.
Andy ate the cephalothorax.
Drink more.
Yeah.
Josh, it's probably the fangs.
Probably the fangs. Dude, can you imagine? I become Spider-Man.
Hey.
This is good news.
Guys, I feel different.
I'm changing. Uncle Bendo.
Andy, I'm sorry. I was trying to find a reel.
No,
I gave up on it and then went back to editing the podcast, and that was like where I jumped back in. I was like, oh, no.
No, that was good. I was actually hungry now, so that tied me over.
What a perfect transition with the reel and your stories of eating sloths and...
Toucans. You said toucan, right?
Yeah.
Toucan.
How does that taste?
Like the bird, not the fruit toucan loop.
Sam?
Turkey, no!
Turkey.
Toucan is... The meat's a little... tough, but it tastes good.
That's great. I had camel once. That's probably the most exotic I think I've ever gotten.
Yeah, I don't know. The most...
Ostrich burger.
Mm.
Wasn't bad.
I mean, I cooked a squirrel once.
Yeah. Squirrels are great, pretty great.
Yeah, they're a lot like frog legs.
Dude, frog legs are awesome.
Yeah.
Love me some frog legs.
Yeah, that was quite the...
That was good.
Good?
Very good. I'm very good. I'm ready to rock.
Tim's like, don't eat the fangs.
Well.
Too late.
I wouldn't want a fang getting stuck in my stomach lining.
Yeah.
Yeah. Looking forward to the future.
It probably was just so dry it would crunch like the rest of the tarantula.
You have to
thank you for telling me that. You're just telling me that because
you
have to
document if something happens.
Yeah, for real. You'll know about it.
There's
I'll
a
be
colonoscopy
dead.
Coming in his future.
Andy's on the pod today, guys. Unfortunately,
he died.
He died
because he ate the fangs. Oh man. Well, Tim, there's more stuff that we want to talk to you about.
We didn't even touch the surface, dude.
I know. Would you want to come on again?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we could have you on multiple times because we have a lot to dissect.
Yeah. Whenever you drop your next book or podcast or show.
Or next time you eat a sloth.
Yep. We'll prepare sloth for you.
I'll be back with that family in March.
Cool. And we'll have to get Mike Tyson on here too.
That'd be great.
That would be awesome. That would be
so cool.
You'll have to come down there to do a could special we ever, do you traveling think we, episode.
What if we get both Mike Tysons on?
Wait, they're like, what else?
The conversation would be wild.
Could we go down to Peru and film a podcast?
Yeah.
All right.
Josh, please.
Come down.
Let's
to
do
Peru.
It.
Josh, please.
Film a podcast.
Will you take us on a
He's
little adventure?
He's got land
adventure?
There. We can go.
I do have land there. Yeah.
All right. We'll do a little adventure.
I will camp out in Peru. I will camp out in Peru.
We're forcing this on you. So
we just invite ourselves.
Oh, believe me, you're forcing it on yourself.
That'd be
oh,
so much
man.
Fun.
All right. Well,
thank you so much for coming. Hey, what do you have going on in your life? What can we tell all the people that are watching?
Well, for people who are interested in the kind of topics that we're talking about today, I know it's all very complex. I have a members community, the elbrinoanalysis.com, where we really break all of this stuff down. We get into a lot of topics that are very interesting, controversial. I have an awesome members community. And then I've got a conference coming up in June of next year in Bozeman, Montana.
You mentioned there may be some congressmen that are there.
Oh, I don't know who's going to come yet.
But potentially?
Yeah, I've invited a friend of mine who's a congressman, and I would love to have a UFO discussion with him at the conference. And we don't know if he's going to be able to make it yet because the scheduling and
politics.
But yeah, there's going to be other guest speakers, and it's Bozeman, Montana is gorgeous at the end of June. It is just beautiful. That's where I live. That's my hometown.
Cool.
I was born in Cleveland, but I've lived in Bozeman for 10 years. It's just going to be awesome. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we'll be talking about one thing that I'm very interested in that we didn't talk about today is cataclysm, the antediluvian world, Nephilim,
we could talk
all that kind
hours.
Of stuff. I've got some great content I'm going to share with people at the conference. So if you're interested in that, you can go to elbrinoevents.com.
Perfect.
And you can get a ticket. And I hope to see you guys in Bozeman.
That'd
yeah,
be great.
And we'll do the opening song, right? The Tim Alberino song?
I feel like the conference would not be complete without it.
All right, cool.
It's a deal.
He said it. You guys heard it.
Perfect. Awesome. If you guys need any Sunday Cool apparel, guess what? Go to SundayCoolSwag.com for all the merch for ninjas, for Sunday Cool. And if you need custom merch for yourself or business or anything like that, SundayCool.com. We do it right here in-house. Let us do your merch for you.
Yep. You can also get my book at, I forgot to mention, Birthright on Amazon.
And the Book of Enoch.
And, would be remiss if I did not mention, I published a Book of Enoch with Nate and Luke from the Blurry Creatures podcast. Our Book of Enoch is really cool.
Which your foreword was amazing.
Yeah, I wrote an introduction and
so
commentary.
Yeah.
And if you've ever wondered about the Book of Enoch, where it came from, what the content is, how it's relevant to the biblical narrative, all the answers are in that book. And we actually, Nate created artwork in the book. So we've got full page artwork that goes along with these scenes.
It's dope.
From Watchers. There's no other Book of Enoch like it on the market. It's really awesome. You can actually get that Book of Enoch on Amazon right now. Or if you're a Blurry Creatures fan, you can go over and get it on their website too. So,
and your book, Birthright, is now audiobook, right?
I have Birthright in audio format as well.
Yeah.
Do this on Spotify, Audible. Perfect. Yeah. And we'll have all that in the bio. Down
yeah,
there, so.
We will. And we are going to continue this conversation. If you're down for it, let's talk a little bit more about Nephilim.
Let's
giants.
Do it.
Crazy stuff. Patreon.com/ninjas or butterflies.
Download the app today. You get discount codes on merch. You get behind the scenes footage. We were practicing the song right before Tim and Jordan showed up. Guess what? It's on Patreon. You got to see all these behind the scenes stuff, all on Patreon.com. Yep. Love you guys.
Love
Thanks
you.
For watching. Tim, you're the best. Thank you.
The man.
Thank you guys. It was entertaining, that's for sure. Good, we ate a tarantula.
Hey, yeah. That happened.
Timothy Averino. Dude, dope. All right. Oh, yeah. Wait, make sure to
like, subscribe, like. Comment your favorite moment from the podcast.
You get it.
And Lily's not here because we kicked her off.
Yeah.
Timothy's here now full time.
Yeah. Timothy is now my wife.
Figure out more on Patreon.
Here we go. All right. Bye.
Love you guys.
Did I say ninja? I meant
butterfly.
The butterfly is no doubt one of God's most beautiful.
I said, empty your mind.
You were martial arts.
Ha! Ninja's not
dead. All right. Pose for the camera.
Yep.
Just for
a good thumbnail.
I'll do the same pose as Tim.
Okay, Tim, you pick a pose, whatever you want to do.
Shove the mic out of your face.
Oh.
And then we'll just, this is the thumbnail.
Clear.
This is how we do it.
I feel like you would get the most views if you say, four idiots eat a tarantula.
That's the new name of the podcast, honestly.
Or maybe do like an inquisitive look, like this. Yeah. So I'll do that. Perfect.
We did it, folks.